Okay, so have you ever felt like you had to like hide a part of yourself at work?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
Like maybe downplay your love for, I don't know, K-pop, or pretend that you don't have like a million plants at home.
Totally. I think we've all been there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And turns out it's like incredibly common.
It is.
This book that I just finished,
Okay.
The Inclusion Equation by Dr. Serena Huang.
Okay.
She shares this like eye-opening stat.
Okay.
60% of employees admit to covering some aspect of their identity at work.
Wow.
It's not just about hiding big things like race or gender identity.
Right.
It's also those smaller,
Yeah.
quirky bits of ourselves.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting is that Dr. Huang digs into like the why behind covering.
Yeah.
It's not just about wanting to avoid awkward conversations or whatever.
Right.
It's often a subconscious survival tactic.
Oh, interesting.
We might be trying to avoid judgment or protect ourselves from potential bias or
Right.
just like make things easier in a workplace that isn't fully inclusive.
Right.
And the thing is, it takes a toll.
Yeah.
Imagine the mental energy it takes to constantly self-monitor and edit who you are.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Dr. Huang connects this to lower engagement and
Yeah.
even burnout,
Makes sense.
which makes sense, right? Who can be like truly productive when they're constantly second-guessing themselves?
Totally. And it's not just an individual problem, you know? This covering tax, it has huge repercussions for organizations
Oh,
too.
yeah, for sure.
Think about the lost creativity and innovation
Absolutely.
when people aren't bringing their full selves to work.
Totally.
You know what I mean? It's
You,
just.
Dr. Huang calls it a hidden drain on productivity.
Right.
And she even gives us a staggering statistic
Oh,
from
righty.
the World Health Organization.
Okay.
Apparently, depression and anxiety cost the global economy over $1 trillion annually in lost productivity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a big deal.
That's mind-blowing. It really highlights the economic imperative of creating inclusive workplaces where people can thrive, you know? Dr. Huang argues that belonging isn't just like a nice to have. It's a critical factor in unlocking the full potential of a workforce.
Totally. And she doesn't just leave us hanging with a problem.
Okay.
Dr. Huang goes deep into how we can actually measure inclusion,
Okay.
which, let's be honest, is way trickier than just looking at diversity numbers.
Right. Yeah, it's about understanding like the unspoken rules
Right.
of like who gets heard and who gets left out.
Yeah.
And that's where Dr. Huang introduces this cool tool called Organizational Network Analysis, or ONA.
Oh, NA, okay.
Yeah, so imagine being able to visualize the flow of communication and collaboration in your company, almost like a social network map.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
So ONA can reveal who's at the center of the network and who's on the periphery. Dr. Huang gives this amazing example where a company used ONA and realized that women were consistently excluded from key meetings
Oh, wow.
with senior leadership.
It's like shining a light on those unconscious patterns of exclusion
Yeah.
that can happen even in companies with good intentions.
Totally.
And what I find fascinating is that ONA doesn't rely on like self-reporting or surveys,
Right.
which can be influenced by all sorts of biases.
Really?
Instead, it uses data from things like emails and calendars
Oh,
to
wow.
reveal the actual patterns of interaction.
It makes you wonder what other hidden dynamics we could uncover with this kind of analysis.
Totally.
It's almost like having a data-driven X-ray vision
Yeah,
for your organization's culture.
exactly. And
Yeah.
speaking of culture, Dr. Huang dives into the importance of psychological safety, which she
Yeah.
describes as like the foundation of a truly inclusive workplace.
Okay.
It's about creating an environment where people feel safe to speak up, share their ideas,
Yeah.
challenge the status quo, even make mistakes without fear of repercussions.
She takes it a step further by outlining like four levels of psychological safety,
Oh.
from like basic comfort to feeling truly empowered to innovate.
Wow.
It's like a roadmap for how to build a culture where people feel psychologically safe,
Right.
not just physically safe.
Right. But what's really interesting is how Dr. Huang pushes us to think about psychological safety differently for different groups.
Like how so?
Like, are there certain demographics within your organization who might feel less safe speaking up or who might experience safety in different ways?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
It's like just because one group feels comfortable doesn't mean that everyone does. And I
Exactly.
imagine that's where data can play a role,
Yes.
helping us understand how psychological safety is experienced across different identities and backgrounds.
Absolutely. It's about moving beyond assumptions.
Yeah.
and using data to get a more nuanced understanding of what true inclusion looks and feels like for everyone.
Now, while fostering psychological safety is essential, Dr. Huang doesn't shy away from the potential pitfalls of new technologies.
For sure.
She acknowledges that AI is a powerful tool in the DEI space,
right?
But warns that we need to approach it with caution.
It's that double-edged sword idea, right?
Yeah.
On the one hand, AI has the potential to personalize experiences, remove human bias from hiring, and even provide mental health support.
Yeah. But on the other hand,
we've
all heard those horror stories about AI algorithms perpetuating existing inequalities.
Absolutely.
Right? Like those facial recognition systems that have been shown to be less accurate for people of color.
Right.
Or those hiring algorithms that accidentally screen out qualified candidates based on biased data.
It's scary stuff.
It is. And that's why Dr. Huang stresses the importance of responsible AI development and deployment.
Yes.
She doesn't sugarcoat the risks.
Yeah.
And she advocates for a human-centered approach to AI, where ethics and fairness are at the forefront.
And she even dedicates a whole section to the importance of AI governance.
AI governance.
Yeah.
Which, I have to admit, made my eyes glaze over a bit at first.
Yeah.
But she explains it in a way that actually makes sense.
Okay.
It's basically about having clear guidelines and processes in place.
Right.
To ensure that AI is used ethically and responsibly.
Think of it like guardrails for AI.
Yeah.
Making sure it doesn't veer off course and end up causing harm.
And what I appreciate is that Dr. Huang doesn't just focus on the technical side of AI governance.
Yeah.
She also highlights the importance of having diverse voices and perspectives involved in the development and oversight of AI systems.
That's so crucial. Because if everyone building AI looks the same and thinks the same, we're bound to end up with systems that are biased by default.
It's like that saying, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And that brings us to another point that Dr. Huang emphasizes.
Man.
Data alone isn't enough.
Right.
We need to be able to translate data into action.
Yeah.
And that's where storytelling comes in.
Storytelling, okay.
This is where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Dr. Huang is a big believer in the power of storytelling to inspire change.
Yeah.
She argues that data can inform and educate.
Yeah.
But it's stories that connect with people on an emotional level.
Right.
And motivate them to act.
Think about it.
Okay.
You can present people with all the statistics in the world.
Yeah.
But it's a personal anecdote, a relatable experience.
Yeah.
A vivid image that really sticks with them.
Right.
And moves them to care.
It's like that example Dr. Huang gives.
Okay.
About a tech company that was struggling to improve employee well-being.
Oh, okay.
They were analyzing all this data from surveys and performance reviews, but they weren't getting anywhere.
Right.
Then they started reading through the comments section of their employee surveys and realized that people were complaining about their chairs.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it turned out that a simple thing like providing ergonomic chairs for remote workers made a huge difference
in
people's comfort and productivity.
Sometimes the most impactful insights are hidden in plain sight.
Yeah.
But it takes a human touch.
Yeah.
That ability to listen and connect the dots, to really see them.
It's a reminder that data can't capture the full complexity of human experience.
Right.
We need to be willing to listen to people's stories.
Yeah.
To understand their needs and perspectives.
Right.
And to use data in a way that serves humanity.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
Absolutely. And that's something that Dr. Huang emphasizes throughout the book. Staying human-centered in the age of data and AI.
Yeah.
It's about using technology to augment our human capabilities.
Right.
Not replace them.
Totally. Yeah. So all in all, this deep dive into Dr. Huang's book has really highlighted the evolving landscape of DEI.
It has.
It's not just about hitting diversity targets.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fostering a sense of belonging.
Right.
Where everyone can thrive.
And it's about recognizing that technology is a powerful tool.
Yes.
But it needs to be wielded responsibly and ethically.
We need to make sure that AI is serving humanity,
not
the other way around.
Exactly.
Now, here's something that Dr. Huang touches on that's been on my mind.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on using AI to personalize work experiences?
Oh, interesting.
Like, imagine getting AI-powered nudges
yeah.
to connect with colleagues you haven't spoken to in a while,
okay.
or receiving personalized recommendations for managing your workload to avoid burnout.
Oh, wow.
Is this the future we want?
That's a big question.
Yeah. What ethical considerations should we be thinking about?
I mean, it's a fascinating idea, isn't it? It could be super helpful, especially as more companies embrace like remote or hybrid work models.
Yeah.
It could help us combat that sense of isolation that some people feel when they're not physically in the office.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that. But there's a part of me that's like a bit wary.
Yeah.
I mean, where do we draw the line between like helpful suggestions
right.
and feeling like we're being like micromanaged by an algorithm?
That's a great question, and it's one that Dr. Huang explores in the book.
Okay.
She talks about the importance of autonomy and freedom of choice.
Yeah.
We don't want to create a workplace where employees feel like they're constantly being like nudged and prodded by AI.
Right. What if I just don't feel like socializing that day?
Right. Exactly.
Or what if the AI keeps suggesting I connect with someone I really don't get along with?
Yeah, that's true too.
It could get awkward fast.
Exactly. And that's why Dr. Huang emphasizes the need for transparency and control.
Okay.
Employees should have the ability to opt out of these features if they choose to.
Right.
And they should have a clear understanding of how the AI is making these recommendations.
It's like those personalized ads
yeah.
that follow you around the internet.
Right.
Sometimes they're helpful, but sometimes they're just creepy. We need to make sure that AI in the workplace is used in a way that feels empowering,
yeah.
not intrusive.
Absolutely. And this whole conversation ties back to that core concept of trust.
Okay.
If employees don't trust their employer to use AI responsibly and ethically,
right.
they're not going to be willing to share their data.
Yeah.
And the whole system falls apart.
It's a reminder that technology is only as good as the people who use it.
Yeah.
We need to be thoughtful about the ways we integrate AI into the workplace.
Yes.
And we need to make sure that human well-being is always at the center of our decisions.
Speaking of well-being, that's another area where Dr. Huang sees huge potential for data and AI. Mm-hmm. She argues that we can use these tools to create more supportive and inclusive environments
right.
that promote mental and emotional health.
I can see how AI could be used to personalize well-being resources, like providing recommendations for meditation apps or connecting employees with mental health professionals.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wonder about the potential for misuse. Could this kind of data be used to penalize employees who are struggling?
That's a valid concern, and it's one that Dr. Huang addresses directly.
Okay.
She talks about the importance of data privacy and ethical considerations.
Yeah.
This kind of data should never be used to punish or discriminate against employees.
Right.
It should be used to support and empower them.
It's like, I wouldn't want my employer to know if I was having trouble sleeping or feeling stressed out.
Right.
Unless I felt comfortable sharing that information.
Right.
And knew it would be used to yep. help me, not hurt me.
Exactly. It all comes back to that foundation of trust.
Right.
And that's why Dr. Huang stresses the importance of having clear policies and guidelines in place mm-hmm. around data collection, storage, and use.
Cool.
Employees need to know how their data is being used and what control they have over it.
It's a complex issue for sure, but it's also an incredibly important one.
It is.
We need to figure out how to harness the power of technology
yeah.
to create workplaces that are not just diverse and equitable, but also supportive and compassionate.
Absolutely. And I think Dr. Huang offers a really compelling vision for how we can achieve that.
Okay.
She talks about the need for a holistic approach to DEI and well-being.
Right.
One that recognizes the interconnectedness of these issues.
Yeah. You can't really address one without the other.
Exactly.
If people don't feel psychologically safe and supported,
right.
they're not going to be able to fully show up and contribute,
right.
regardless of their background or identity.
Exactly. And Dr. Huang provides some really practical examples of companies that are doing this well.
Oh, cool.
Like there's this one company that created a program for Women's History Month.
Okay.
That combined a workshop on gender equity with a fitness class focused on women's empowerment.
That's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
It's a way to address both the intellectual and the physical aspects of well-being.
Yeah.
And it creates a sense of community and shared purpose.
Right. And she also talks about the importance of tailoring programs and policies
okay.
to the specific needs of different employee groups.
Like acknowledging that Black workers might face unique challenges when it comes to mental health support.
Mm-hmm.
Or that Gen Z might have different expectations around work-life balance.
Exactly. A one-size-fits-all approach to DEI and well-being simply doesn't work.
Right.
We need to be willing to listen to the diverse voices within our organizations
yeah.
and create solutions that meet their specific needs.
It sounds like a lot of work, but it also sounds incredibly rewarding.
It is.
I mean, imagine creating a workplace where everyone feels truly seen, heard, and valued.
It's a powerful vision, and it's one that I think Dr. Huang lays out really effectively in the book.
Yeah.
She shows us that it's possible to create a more human-centered workplace.
Yeah.
One where technology is used to enhance our lives,
right,
not control them.
Now, we've talked a lot about the potential of AI to personalize work experiences.
Yes.
Both in terms of connection and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Huang also touches on some other interesting applications of AI.
Okay.
Like using it to create more inclusive learning and development opportunities.
Yeah. This was a really interesting section of the book.
Okay.
Dr. Huang talks about how AI can be used to personalize learning paths, provide real-time feedback,
right,
and even identify areas where employees might need additional support.
It's like having a personalized tutor or mentor,
right,
who's available 24/7.
Exactly.
And I can see how this could be particularly helpful for employees from underrepresented groups,
yeah,
who might not have access to the same mentorship and development opportunities,
right,
as their majority counterparts.
Absolutely. AI can help level the playing field by providing everyone with access to personalized learning experiences,
right,
that cater to their individual needs and learning styles.
And it's not just about formal learning programs.
Right.
Dr. Huang also talks about how AI can be used to create more inclusive day-to-day work experiences.
Oh, interesting.
Like imagine using AI to translate documents into multiple languages.
Okay.
Or to provide real-time captions during meetings.
Those are great examples.
Yeah.
And there are so many other possibilities. AI could be used to analyze meeting transcripts,
oh,
and identify patterns of interruption or exclusion.
Oh, wow.
Or to provide personalized feedback to help employees communicate more effectively across cultures.
It's almost like having an AI-powered DEI coach,
right,
who's constantly working in the background,
yeah,
to make the workplace more inclusive and equitable.
Exactly.
But of course, it all comes back to that question of trust and responsible use.
Right. We need to make sure that these AI systems are designed with fairness and equity in mind, and that,
yeah,
they're not perpetuating existing biases or creating new ones.
And we need to make sure that employees have a voice in how these technologies are implemented and used.
Right.
It's not about replacing human judgment with algorithms.
That's right.
It's about using AI to augment our capabilities,
yes,
and create a more human-centered workplace.
Exactly. And that brings us back to Dr. Huang's vision of a human-first culture.
Okay.
It's a culture where technology is used to empower people,
right,
not control them.
It's a culture where everyone feels safe, valued, and respected.
Yes.
And where everyone has the opportunity to contribute their unique talents and perspectives.
It's a beautiful vision, and it's one that I think is worth striving for.
Yeah.
But as Dr. Huang points out, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
It takes intention, effort, and a willingness to embrace new ways of thinking and working.
And it requires a fundamental shift in how we view technology.
It does.
We need to move beyond seeing technology as a threat.
Right.
Or a replacement for human connection.
Yeah.
And start seeing it as a tool that can help us create a more just equitable and compassionate world.
Now, Dr. Huang talked about how Gen AI could personalize work experiences.
Yeah.
She even gave an example of getting AI-powered nudges to connect with colleagues you haven't spoken to in a while.
Yeah, and she mentioned how it could potentially suggest people you might have shared interests with.
Oh, cool.
Based on your profiles,
mm,
or work history.
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
But it also raises some questions about privacy and autonomy.
It does, like, should our employers really be suggesting who we should be friends with?
Yeah, right.
What if,
yeah,
you don't want to connect with someone the AI suggests?
Right.
It feels a bit like those dating apps that try to match you with people based on algorithms.
It does.
Right.
And what about those AI-powered suggestions for managing our workloads to avoid burnout?
Right.
I can see how that could be helpful, but it also raises questions about surveillance and control.
Definitely. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it would be great if our employers could help us manage our stress levels and avoid burnout.
Right.
But on the other hand, I wouldn't want my employer to have access to all that personal data.
Right. Where do we draw the line?
Right.
And how do we ensure that this kind of technology is used to support employees, not exploit them?
It's a tough question, and there are no easy answers.
No.
But I think Dr. Huang's book provides a really valuable framework for thinking about these issues.
Yes, it does.
She encourages us to approach these new technologies with both optimism and caution, and to always prioritize human well-being.
And she reminds us that we have a choice in how we shape the future of work.
Yeah.
We can choose to use technology to create a more human-centered workplace.
Right.
One where everyone feels valued, supported, and empowered to thrive.
I think that's a really empowering message.
It is.
And it's one that I hope we all take to heart.
Me too. Yeah, it's exciting and kind of unnerving, right?
Yeah.
Like, imagine a virtual assistant that not only helps you schedule meetings,
okay,
but also nudges you to connect with a colleague working on a similar project, even if you've never met.
Yeah, it could definitely break down silos and foster collaboration.
Right.
But then there's that question.
Yeah.
Is the AI pushing us toward people it thinks we should connect with?
Right.
Or is it truly respecting our individual preferences?
That's the million-dollar question. Dr. Huang brings up those ethical considerations we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
How do we ensure these AI tools are amplifying our agency, not limiting it?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to become puppets of an algorithm.
Right.
Even if its intentions are good.
It reminds me of that sci-fi trope where everyone's matched with their perfect partner by AI.
Oh, yeah.
And it all goes haywire.
Right.
Workplace edition, anyone.
Huh. Okay, maybe not that extreme, but it highlights how important transparency and user control are.
Oh.
If I'm getting these AI-powered nudges, I want to know why the AI thinks this connection is valuable, and I want the ability to override it if it feels off.
Give me the insights, AI.
Yes.
But don't make the decisions for me.
Right.
Speaking of decisions, what about that idea of AI helping us manage workloads to avoid burnout?
Yeah.
In theory, fantastic.
Right.
But could get Big Brother-ish fast.
Agreed. Dr. Huang doesn't shy away from these concerns.
Yeah.
Imagine the AI flags you as high risk for burnout.
Okay.
Because you're working late.
Okay.
But you're actually just in a creative flow state.
Right.
Does your boss get alerted?
Oh.
Suddenly, a well-intentioned feature feels invasive.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's where those clear policies and ethical frameworks we talked about earlier become absolutely critical.
It's not enough to just say, oh, the AI will help us.
Right.
We need human oversight checks and balances and a clear understanding of the potential downsides.
And employee consent.
Yes.
It can't just be, well, the company has decided AI knows best how to manage your well-being.
Right. Exactly.
There needs to be opt-in, the ability to customize settings.
Yeah.
And a clear sense of what data is being used and how.
It all circles back to that foundation of trust.
Yeah.
If employees don't trust the system or the intentions behind it, these AI tools, no matter how well-meaning, are going to backfire.
So like we were saying earlier about if you don't have that trust, then what are we even doing here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dr. Huang is a tech optimist, but she's also realistic.
Yeah.
She's not advocating for blindly handing over control to algorithms. It's about finding that sweet spot where AI augments human intelligence, making us better at connecting, collaborating, and caring for ourselves and each other.
That idea of augmenting is key, isn't it?
It is.
It's not about replacing human judgment or connection.
Right.
It's about AI giving us insights we might miss.
Yeah.
Nudging us in potentially helpful directions.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the power remains with the individual.
Spot on. And I think this is where Dr. Huang's book really shines.
Okay.
It doesn't just present the shiny possibilities of AI.
Right.
It equips us with the critical thinking skills to ask the tough questions.
Yeah.
Consider the trade-offs.
Right.
And make informed decisions about how we want to integrate these technologies into our work lives.
So to wrap things up, it feels like Dr. Huang's book is both a celebration of what's possible.
Yes.
And a cautionary tale about the potential pitfalls.
Totally. It's a call to action for leaders, for tech developers,
and
for all of us as employees to be active participants in shaping this future of work.
We can't just sit back and assume technology will magically solve all our problems.
Right.
We need to be engaged, informed, and willing to advocate for a human-centered approach to AI.
Absolutely. It's not about humans versus AI.
Right.
It's about finding ways for humans and AI to work together.
Yeah.
To create workplaces that are not just efficient and productive,
right,
but also equitable, fulfilling, and truly supportive of human well-being.
This has been such a thought-provoking deep dive into Dr. Huang's work.
It has.
If any of these ideas resonated with you, be sure to check out her book.
Yes.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
And as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
What stood out to you most from this conversation?
Yeah. What are you excited or apprehensive about when it comes to the role of AI in creating a more inclusive future of work?
Right.
Drop a comment below and Let's keep the discussion going.
Yes. And if you enjoyed this deep dive,
yeah,
don't forget to subscribe, like, and share this with your network.
Yes, please do.
We're exploring a new book every week, and we'd love to have you join us on this journey of discovery.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.